times I fear myself.
The Cure with Amy Cabo. Life can bring many difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today. I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. We are live every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to us live on the radio or on our app, The Cure. Please download it from the App Store or listen and see me live on Roku, The Cure channel, as we started live streaming, or on Fire TV or on Android TV or GodIsTheCure.com, or later listen to the recorded shows via any podcast app. I'm also joined by Dr. Boris Nikolov, who is my partner at work and in life.
Hello.
This show deals with the suffering and the tenacity of the human spirit, the will to survive, and the courage to keep moving forward, despite any obstacle, with the help of God and each other. We do provide testimonials to let people know that they're not alone, and in this show, the testimony started with me, having been a survivor from child abuse well into adulthood. We also have professionals in the medical field and inspirational speakers that are willing to help and can give valuable information, because education is key. Transparency is needed, and I believe we can help each other. For me, my healing came from God, but other forms of healing are presented as well to service everyone. Life can be very challenging, but always know we are not alone. And today, we're going to discuss about healing the healers. And today's special guest is Reverend Matthew Krebin. Reverend Matthew Krebin is exploring the long-term effect of mass casualties, trauma on faith leaders, and is on a mission to help educate and prepare them to serve when a future trauma lands in their community. Matt is the senior pastor of Newton Congregational Church and has served his community after the tragic mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School. He and other faith leaders had to look to each other for their own personal support, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. Reverend Krebin is the host of the documentary series by Odyssey Impact, Healing the Healers. The series asks questions. When crisis strikes, we run to our faith leaders for healing and comfort. But who helps the healers? And in the song Shallow that just plays, it reveals the concept that we sometimes fall and we feel like we need more, always searching. And in good times, we look for change, but when in bad times, we fear ourselves. So when tragedy hits, how do we keep it together when having to help others despite needing help ourselves? Reverend Krebin, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for being on The Cure.
Well, thanks for hosting me. It's an honor for me to be with you all.
The honor is ours. Reverend, what got you into the ministry? If you could just let us know a little bit about what was the road that led you to become a pastor.
Sure. I actually grew up in California, in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I was really grew up in the church. My parents were active in our local congregation. My father and mother actually met at the church where I grew up through a young adult ministry, single adult ministry, and we continued as a family. I grew up there. I didn't have anyone in my family who had been well, at least in my recent history, who had been clergy or ministers. But I did get some encouragement from my congregation to think about ministry. I didn't really think that that was the path I was actually going to take. But then I had an experience after college, the summer after I had graduated from college. And that experience really led me to sense my call. Not so much because I had gifts. My congregation had affirmed that I had a number of gifts for ministry, and it encouraged me to consider it, but I really felt that I needed a call from God, and my call out of my experience came not so much from my own skills and abilities, but really from my own brokenness that I felt God could use in ways. And then some, you know, many years later now, after what I went to seminary nearly 25 years ago, it really was out of this experience of trauma and mass trauma at Sandy Hook Elementary School that really that initial calling around the brokenness of our humanity is how God oftentimes uses us and how grace finds its way into us. And I think trauma is really an experience and a reminder to us that oftentimes those places of brokenness are places where God can most work in us and through us, and that has certainly been my experience.
And this Andy Hook experience that happened around December 14, 2012, back then, was it shortly after you had become a pastor in the ministry? That must have been very challenging.
Yeah, no, actually, so I had served as a pastor already for 12 years in New Hampshire. I had been a pastor here in Newtown for about 6.5 years, I think it is. And as a pastor, I had served, you know, and had served a few years in Rhode Island and Massachusetts prior to my time in New Hampshire. So I'd had experience as a pastoral minister. I had actually had experience dealing with people who had been affected by violence. Wow. I certainly had pastored through several incidences of families who had been affected by homicide and suicide and, you know, other very tragic circumstances, but nothing on the scale of the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School. So,
I can't even imagine. It must be so hard to comprehend the impact that the Sandy Hook had on your community. What impact did it have on you and other faith leaders in Newton?
Yeah, so, you know, it was, I think, for many of us local clergy who responded to the firehouse on that day and began that journey with our communities, you know, very much overwhelming. Nothing that I had experienced and most of my colleagues had trained for in terms of how you deal with an incident of such mass trauma, of a disaster that really impacts the whole community. So you have both, you know, obviously directly impacted families who had lost loved ones, the folks who, you know, experienced just horrific, both hearing and seeing just awful things, both first responders and children and teachers and staff and others, and then, of course, ripples just from the whole community. So I think that's where it really is different. So often we think of, sometimes we think of pastoral care or clergy as being something where you are dealing with a family or an individual one-on-one, but here we're seeing the impact of the ripples that were impacting so many in our community. We have a community of about 27,000 people. You know, I have a congregation of 400 plus, but that, you know, that community was also looking for support and caring. And so for clergy, it was, you know, I think for many of us, we just weren't trained necessarily to think
who would be
in the ways that, no, you know, in those kind of ways. And unfortunately, you know, we're seeing more and more communities affected by natural disasters, by human-made disasters of all kinds. And, you know, as your own story talks about, and, you know, that we also have people that come through our doors that may not talk about the trauma that they've experienced in their childhood or young adulthood, but who themselves are being impacted. And if we're not trained as clergy or become more aware of how trauma impacts people, you know, we can be less helpful both to them and also just to ourselves. But certainly, as Healing the Healers talks about, you know, part of this is how do you navigate for yourself and make sure that you're able to be a resource for others because you have created and found resources and support for yourself.
Well, I found what was helpful to me the most was helping others. And I basically turned to God because nothing else worked. And there's different traumas, and the world could be very challenging, and it can be scary. And the only thing that gives me any hope at all, because nothing's a given, is the fact that there's a God, and I just put my trust in Him.
Sure.
But it must have been very devastating for the whole community. And how were you able to bring all those people together, and the clergy that was working within the community? They must have felt overwhelmed. I mean, God must have had a hand in it.
Oh, most certainly. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just to highlight what you had said, I think one of the things that for many people, is one of the things that happens in a traumatic communal event or a natural disaster is so many people feel disempowered. And one of the ways
yes.
in which
yes,
we actually find ourselves able to continue going is that, you know, by responding, by helping others, by pulling together and finding, you know, a way that we make a difference. And I think
I agree.
Experience that. And certainly that's what happened here. You know, we talk about...
I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. We will continue talking to Matthew Craven after the short break. Erin Craven, stay with us.
Thank you.
We will be right back with Amy Cabo and The Cure. And now we will continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Welcome back to the show. For those that are tuning in, I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. If this is your first time tuning in, we're talking about healing the healers. Your old gun blind can leave us lonely with a diamond mind and ocean eyes, making it sometimes seem unfair. But it reminds me of how vulnerable we can be and how important it is to have a relationship with God, especially when it becomes too much. We are joined by Reverend Matthew Craven. Reverend Craven, why do you think pastors are hesitant to ask for help? Why do you think as a culture we often don't take the emotional and mental health needs of faith leaders into consideration?
Oh, that's a great question. I think part of it is that for many clergy, we are looked to, and we have this sense of responsibility that we're the resource, we're the well that everyone who comes can, you know, draw spiritual resources from, and we want to be available to offer that. And so I think it's much more challenging for clergy to admit that they themselves are vulnerable, or, you know, are feeling themselves overwhelmed or dried out by some of the challenges. And I think that's especially true in crisis moments, especially like, you know, that can be presented by disasters in local communities where pastors are turned to. I had, for instance, somebody who was a wonderful resource for me early on, and they said to me, you know, one of the things that clergy will do in situations like this is you'll say, well, things are really bad now, but I need to take care of other things for myself or my family. But you'll say, well, if I just make it through the week, then I'll take care of that. And a week will come and you'll say, well, I don't really still have time, so I'll just, in a month I'll take care of that, or 6 months. And disasters don't allow... there are compounding challenges that come from mass trauma events or disasters, and so there's always more to be done. There's always much more that you can recognize as clergy that you have to do, and so clergy will put off that care because they want to be that resource, and they'll put their other relationships with family and others sometimes on hold because they want to be present to and available for that overwhelming good. I describe it as sacrificing ourselves on the altar of the good. And that's where, you know, there's so much good that needs to be done. There's so much response that we want to have that sometimes we sacrifice ourselves or our own important relationships with others. So
I had a question about that. I actually had a question about that, Pastor.
Sure.
It's that selfless act of love that we all recognize. Putting others before ourselves. Mothers do it. Parents do it. We do that all the time. And sometimes we are there, sometimes more. We're more concerned about being there for others that we sometimes tend to forget ourselves, and we tend to forget our families. And if we're all equal in the eyes of God, aren't our families, ourselves, and the people we're helping just as important? Shouldn't we give all three aspects equal effort?
Sure. I mean, we forget that Jesus says, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, but also love your neighbor as yourself.
As yourself. I love it. Thank you.
Yeah, so it is a threefold. You know, you can't love God and neighbor if you don't have that, also that recognition that part of that love is the love of self, the care of self, and the need in order to manifest the love that we have for God and for others, that we take that on. And I think, you know, as you well know and others know, that very often, sometimes for different reasons, we will sacrifice that. We shouldn't just be self-love or self-centeredness, obviously. That right. itself can be a destructive force, but if it's not in balance, you know, there's ways in which we can become self-centered, and that's an imbalance. But also, if we're only centered, you know, for our neighbor or for others, and even for God, that that we can lose track of that need for making sure that our own, as you remind us, every single one of us is made in the image of God, so that our own beauty as a God created revelation is, you know, so important to honor that. And yes, that any one side can become a perversion if we don't keep it in balance. But I think that's the challenge for people in helping ministries.
We just
sacrifice ourselves. So yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I would think God would want us to be just as good to ourselves as we are to others, and I just wanted to make that a point, because I know that sometimes people say, well, to be able to help others, I need to take care of myself first. I need to help myself first. Well, what people don't understand, that in the process of helping others, you are also helping yourself.
Oh, yes, certainly. And that's why I think it's a dynamic relationship. It's not an either or. I only have to do this, or I only take care of myself, or I only take... You know, that really in that process, when we're helping, as we said, you know, when we're helping others, actually for many people who've been in disaster situations or trauma situations, it's actually the care for others or doing for others, being selfless, actually is empowering. It helps us actually make it through the trauma. It helps us, you know, find our way through the disaster itself, because we're able to feel like we're empowered to do something. Very often disasters are, by their nature, overwhelm us and feel like we feel very often disempowered, and communities feel disempowered. So it was important for us here in Newtown to
be there for each other.
Encourage people and allow people, yeah, to
yes.
care for each other, to find ways to do things for each other, to
yes.
you know, take on. And I think a lot of people experienced that need and that desire, because people didn't want to just, you know, sit and wallow in what felt like helplessness. And so it's very important to recognize that, and the power of that, the power of relationship. We know we learned very early on, it's why people do go back to, you know, churches and faith communities after an incident of a natural disaster, or a, you know, a human-made disaster like ours. We saw many people come back into faith communities for gatherings, whether it be Sunday morning worship or other kinds of gathering. People wanted to be together. People wanted to make connection and to honor relationships with others, and recognize that we needed one another, and found support with each other. And so obviously those kinds of things are very important. You know,
and sometimes within the biggest tragedies, you can see the greatest love, is what I've noticed. Can you tell me what's the heart behind the series, Healing the Healers?
Right, and definitely people can go online to healingthehealers.org and learn more about the series. But the series was really created because we didn't want to just have a training video, things you need to know, and, you know, we could make something very dry, and you know, just information, totally information-based. We really wanted to have conversations and allow people to share their stories, faith leaders of their own experiences and their own struggles and their own successes, their own insights. So that's really what it is. It's a conversation. you know.
That's nice, because it's important, because sharing your story and sharing your experience, you don't know who you're helping. So in a sense, we can all be healers in our own sense. We can all be healers. And I think the idea would be for us to be there for each other, to heal each other, because I think that's what God intended. And that's what we were meant here to do.
We will be right back with Amy Cabell and The Cure. And now we will continue with Amy Cabell and The Cure.
We're back. Thanks for joining us. I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. You can listen to us every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern on your radio, on the app The Cure, the Roku channel The Cure, or GodIsTheCure.com, or later as a podcast. I love that song. I believe that it's God or someone that loves you that says, put your hand in mine, the one that wants to be with you all the time. Thinking of how much we're loved can be such a peaceful feeling. We are continuing a conversation with Reverend Matthew Crevin about healing the healers. Reverend, in the documentary series, Healing the Healers, can you discuss with us some of the topics that are discussed?
Yes, of course. So we have a number of conversations that take place with several different faith leaders, and we explore with them really partly their own personal story of their own intersection with trauma and mass trauma, and how that has impacted them personally as well as within their ministry. We look at issues like, you know, how, like some of the things we've been talking about, how did they look at their own care, and were, you know, did they find care from others in their community? How, if they were in a local congregation, how did they find that response? We look at, you know, how did they see that impact of that trauma? For some of them, you know, several of our conversations are with folks that have, you know, experienced pretty substantial and severe trauma, but a number of years ago, and how has that journey been? I think for many of us who, you know, I've been on this journey in my community for a few years now. But we had conversations with, a Jewish cantor and a police chaplain who's been himself a police officer and had, you know, experienced trauma on the job. Also, wow. Been a first responder, chaplain responder to the 9/11.
And so, what it's like been for them?
Yeah.
And so Reverend, so you find that all the religions kind of come together in moments like that, or you don't find that?
Oh, there's only one God.
Yeah, I guess I'm informed by when I was in seminary, I had a Jewish rabbi who taught a couple courses at our Christian seminary, and he was always asked, why are you a Jewish rabbi teaching at a Christian seminary? And he tells the story of how he was a chaplain, actually, in World War II.
Wow.
And he was on the front lines, the battlefield.
Wow.
And when injured soldiers, sometimes who were facing, you know, basically the end of their lives, when, you know, would call out, they say, we need a chaplain. And he, you know, and he and his fellow chaplains would respond to wherever they were needed. And
nice.
In those moments, as he pointed out, it wasn't, nobody said, hey, now, are you the Roman Catholic priest, or are you the Jewish chaplain, or are you the Protestant chaplain? You know, you were,
doesn't
you
matter.
Had to be the response of care and represent God as best you were able to do in circumstances of just utter death and violence and confusion, and that shaped him for all of
yes.
his life, and his need to recognize that that he needed to build connections between all kinds of people. For him, you know, it was with Jews and Christians, because of his experiences on the battlefield. So you know, I've been informed by that. I think trauma does that too. I think, you know, I find in some ways I found myself closer to folks that come from different faith traditions who have themselves experienced mass trauma events or disasters, because we share a real common experience. interestingly, then sometimes I might feel connected to others who maybe are part of my own faith tradition, just because those common experiences to do that. We know, of course, that's true for military, veterans who've been in wars and things, that they oftentimes need to be with folks who've gone through the same things that they've gone through. So that's one of the things I think that this conversation and Healing the Healers helps is for people to have those conversations and recognize that sometimes very important theological and belief structures, differences with others, but very often, we do share a common humanity. My own belief is that every single person here is created in the image of God. That's out of my own.
Well, I believe love. I believe love is only one religion. Yeah. I mean, love only comes in one form, and it doesn't matter where from and who from. And right. I think that's the underlying factor.
Sure. Yeah, we're all
that connects us all.
And Jesus reminds us through the parable of the Good Samaritan that who is the good neighbor? It's oftentimes the person who seem different and disagree over matters of faith interpretation and everything else, and yet in the end, who was the neighbor? Who showed love? Who showed compassion?
But Reverend, it's really great that you took into account the healers, because they're so busy being there for others and healing others. And I don't know who thinks about the person who's doing the healing. They always think the person's okay. But sometimes that person needs to be taken into consideration too. And it's nice that you bring this to light, that you made a documentary about this, because it is difficult, like you said, for them to admit that they can be hurt as well when they're busy trying to help others. And this is something that they can look at, and it can be very therapeutic, I believe.
Yeah, right, and it's really important for... Oh, I'm sorry.
Yep. No, you're sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I would just say, one of the reasons we made this Healing the Healers is that... like I said, I didn't receive much insight or skills in this. And unfortunately, with a number of natural disasters that we're seeing, that are taking place, from wildfires to hurricanes to other kinds of things,
yes.
Human-made disasters with mass shootings and other kinds of yes. situations, that many pastors, faith leaders, are going to be called upon to serve in these situations. And I think, we have been less than... For many of them, many of us, if they're like me, have not been trained in this area. And trauma is a different thing than what many pastors are trained to deal with. And so our theory, wow. part of that is to help people get some information and awareness about trauma, and hopefully get some more deep. We have resource material that's supplemental to the videos. That
well, you have to be like a psychology. Do you have psychological, this is not your normal confession, let's say.
Yeah, and this, because trauma, and this is where I said to you even before, for me, having gone through this experience, I look back over my own ministry, and I recognize that there were people that came through my doors at my church at different times in my ministry who were traumatized, who I didn't recognize at the time as being traumatized. And I didn't have that skill set or those eyes to see that, and I realized that my ministry was less able to be helpful to those folks than I could have been if I had more awareness and more information. And so that's what we're trying to do with this series, is get as many folks, many faith leaders as possible, and other denominational leaders, and other regional folks and others, just aware of these issues, and get more in-depth training and resources available to our clergy who are in communities that are more than likely either have folks in their churches and faith communities already who have been traumatized, or may actually find themselves in a situation where they're having to deal with a mass disaster that's impacting their whole community. And we want them to have some skills and some awareness, so hopefully they'll be able to navigate that and be the people I know that all of us want to be, who are in ministry. We're here to help people and to really make a difference in the lives of the people, to show the love of God and the care and compassion that we know is a part, is deeply rooted in our faith. But in order to do that, I think we have to be informed. And unfortunately, many of us have not been well informed and just don't have the resources. So we're trying to offer this as a way.
This is great, educate other But I also wanted to ask you, do you think that the church as a whole, or individual churches, can do more to prevent some of those mass shootings, let's say, to be there for somebody that is troubled and doesn't know what to do?
Yes, I certainly think that, if you're looking at I think we have an issue of anger, you know, in this country, that, you know, many of these human-made disasters, if you will, violent acts, mass shootings and other things.
Maybe we need more God in our lives.
Yeah, yes. Well, our root are people that are angry, you know, and sometimes we look at, like, what have they chosen, but sometimes it's really doctrines of all kinds that are at their base, anger, expressions of rage that right. And I think that as faith leaders and as leaders in local communities, how do we help to nurture and both individually finding people, but also continuing to build communities of compassion and love, as we talk about,
exactly.
Jesus didn't say rage was the answer.
No, Jesus said, love me and love one another as you love me. Yeah. That's exactly what I remember him saying.
Right.
When we are back, we will continue talking to Reverend Matthew Creven about healing the healers. I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure.
Right back with Amy Cabo and The Cure. And now we will continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure.
We are back. Thanks for being with us. I'm Amy Cabo and this is The Cure. You can listen to us every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern on your radio or on our app, The Cure, on Roku, The Cure Channel, or on GodIsTheCure.com. We are joined by Matthew Creven talking about healing the healers. Reverend Matthew Creven made a documentary about healing the healers. And this song, Lay Back and Relax. I'd like to believe that if I'm next to God, everything will be okay. We hope to have that one person in our lives that makes it all right. And if we don't, there's always God. And live in the present. Enjoy the moment. So I love that song because it tells you to lay back and relax. Basically, enjoy the ride of life. Trust God and trust His direction, because as long as He's in control, whatever is meant to be, it will be. So just let it be. Reverend, It's a tongue twister for me to say Reverend Creven. I don't know. So I'll just call you Reverend. How does that sound? Okay. So we were talking about the Healing the Healers, the documentary series. And I wanted to ask you that, what would you like, what do you hope that churches and pastors and Christians in general will take away after watching the film? What's the take-home message?
Yeah, I think one of the take-home messages is that trauma is an area that more and more pastors are going to need to be responding to in different ways, and that for many of us as pastors, we are ill-informed and ill-aware of how trauma works and its impact. One of the things that happened for us after Sandy Hook, the shooting, was that we had a lot of very well-intentioned people. As we were talking about earlier, people want to help, and we had well-intentioned people that wanted to help, even clergy and others, and even some chaplains that wanted to help here. And actually, because they didn't know much about trauma, I don't think they were as helpful as they could be, and in some cases were actually less than helpful to people that needed it the most. And so I think it's really important for faith leaders to become more informed about how trauma impacts individuals and communities, And you're not going to learn everything from this video, what you need to know, but what you can do is hopefully learn that the things that you and realize the things I don't know. And that's as important as anything else, because then when you need help, you can ask for it and look for resources and also develop those kind of resources when your local community and through regional and even denominationally to make sure that people are getting the kind of
resources that they need.
Yeah,
and it's not just from Newton. It's any mass shooting these days. There's so many tragedies. It can apply to anybody.
Sure, and like communities are, like I said, it feels as if it's very possible. You know, for unfortunately, and I say this in some of the literature, for many clergy, it's not a question of if this will happen, but when it might happen. And
will we be prepared?
Yeah,
yes.
And will you be able to be prepared? And as I say, it's not that clergy will become experts in trauma. None of us, unless we go on and really study, you know, for many, many years, we'll have the expertise of to know everything we need to know about trauma. But it's like what we need to know what we don't know. I liken it to clergy who want to be helpful to you know, clergy being like a surgeon. Or like somebody, you know, coming in off the street and saying, "Hey, I'm going to do surgery with this butter knife," you know, and thinking that they're going to take care of somebody when they don't really have the tools that they need or and the knowledge to do what needs to be done. And so that's why we feel it's such an important series. There's just been not a lot of, even though there's trauma has been out there, there's not been a lot of resources provided for clergy specifically to get some insight into the things that they need to know so that they can minister effectively. So that's why we feel it's just so important. I don't want to see clergy feel, you know, as we had to kind of find our way. You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, I wish I had known, you know, before this happened in Newtown, and unfortunately I didn't. And so this is something I hope can help some people to get more of that awareness before. And I pray that if people get this information, they don't ever have to use it. But if they do, I just pray that it'll be helpful to them so that they can, you know, show forth in the best way possible God's love and compassion for people that really need it and are most vulnerable. Especially after incidents like this, it's so important that we, you know, like physicians, that not only that we show love and care, but that we do no harm. And sometimes people can be well-intentioned, but actually end up doing more harm to people who are vulnerable and broken by trauma because they don't know what those folks might need and how to be most helpful to them. So it's really important that people get this information.
Yes, I mean, it must be really, really, really difficult, and I can't imagine, my daughter was almost killed, but I've never had anyone die, and I think that must be the most difficult suffering anyone can go through. Reverend, is there any way that we can pray for you guys and the families of Newton, any of the families of mass shootings that have been occurring, or tragedies? Or disasters.
Praying for the families. I think one of the hardest things for families who have lost loved ones, especially in mass shootings, is very often they feel like that their loved ones are going to be forgotten and not
Never.
Remembered. And as much as anything else, they don't want people, you know, taking charge of. Or control over how their families are remembered, but at the same time they don't want those people forgotten. So actually, prayer is a powerful thing. I believe in prayer of remembrance and prayer that holds people and says, "Yes, you're not forgotten, and your loved one is not forgotten." That, you know, I think is so often we sometimes think that people want to forget, but they don't want to forget. They want to remember their loved one. They want to remember the beauty of that. And they need to, and that's part of trauma, is integrating that into this new life, because, you know, there's no going back to normal. If you've been traumatized, you don't go back to your old life. The only thing you can do is integrate, you know, the experiences that you've had into a new life, and a life that, what I call a higher wisdom life, that integrates all of that loss, that that brokenness, but into a way that doesn't forget about it, but actually integrates it so it no longer has power over you. But it's not a forgetting, and that's so important these days. So prayer is a powerful thing. Remembering those folks who are going through this, and knowing that it's a long term. People still appreciate prayers here in Newtown, even all these years later, because it's an ongoing journey. It's not a journey that ends after a year or 2 years, 3 years or 4 years. It's a lifetime journey. There's joy along the way. There's celebration. It's not all loss. Sorrow and sadness, but it is an ongoing journey. So we appreciate all the prayers and remembrances that people have. And I still get folks letting me know that they're praying for us, and that's a powerful force for us.
Is there a prayer you can lead that we can say now?
Sure, I'll be happy to offer that prayer. Let's pray.
Sure.
Holy and gracious God of love and compassion, you who hold us every moment of our lives, we pray for every single person who has been affected by a disaster, who have lost loved ones, who themselves have been broken and battered by violence or destruction. We pray that they might know that they are not alone, and that your love for them continues to hold them fast, and that our love, even love that is not always realized spoken terms, is there, and that you will help each one of us to continue to be mindful of how we can provide support and encouragement for those who are on a journey of a lifetime. Bless them on those journeys. Bless all the families here in Newtown who continue on their journey, but also bless those around this country and around this world who themselves are experiencing, even in this moment, new trauma and new violence. And may your love hold them and guide them on their journeys towards a love which knows no end. I pray this in the name and spirit of Jesus, who has promised that we all might know life and know it abundantly this day and every day and through all eternity. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Father. Reverend, sorry, I'm Catholic. Okay, so Reverend, we're coming up to the end of the show. Is there anything that you would, any other thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners? We've got 1 minute.
Yeah, I would just share with folks that if you know, you yourself are a pastor, or if you're listening and you know of a pastor or faith leader, clergy person who you think might benefit from knowing about this resource, or you're involved with denominational work or other work, just do take a look at it online at healinghealers.org, and we hope that it will prove to be helpful to as many people as possible, and that that no one who goes through trauma or a disaster might come to a church and at least not feel that folks there understand, at least on a, hopefully on a little deeper level, what it means to be going through that process. And they might experience that love of God.
So, thank you, Reverend, for being with us. Thank you so much.
Sure.
For more information on Reverend Matthew Krebin and his work can be found on GodIsTheCure.com. Under guests, please check out the documentary series, Healing the Healers. I would like to finish with the following poem. Don't quit when things go wrong, as they sometimes will. When the road you're trudging seems all uphill. When the funds are too low and the debts are high, and you want to smile, but you have to sigh. When all is pressing you down a bit, rest if you must, but don't you quit. Success is failure turned inside out, the silver tint of clouds of doubt. And you can never tell how close you are. It may be near when it seems far. So stick to the fight when your heart is hit. It's when things go wrong that you must not quit. This is Amy Cabo.
With Amy Cabo. For more information or to get Amy's book, Love is the Answer, God is the Cure, or to listen to the podcasts of previous shows, visit godisthecure.com.